Hey, what's up, Cub fans? Welcome to episode 109. I'm sorry, 101. I don't know where 109 came from.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
Yeah, I don't know why I thought 109. Episode 101 of Locked On Cubs. I'm Ryan Davis. That's Sean Sears. We're talking about a Cubs victory yesterday. A really good game from Quintana. I'm pretty sure he listens to our podcast. Every time I'm in the clubhouse, I see him walking around with headphones in. So I assume he listened to Locked On Cubs and was like, they're right. I should, you know, nibble a little less.
Yeah, he took our advice, which good on you, Jose. You know, never afraid to outsource.
All right. So yesterday, again, after griping about Jose Quintana and the walks, he had a really good game against the Giants. He threw six shutout innings and left at 86 pitches. So he really could have gone seven, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you.
The only moment in which he hit a snag was the fourth inning, but he got a double play to get him out of it. The Cubs scored two runs in the seventh, including one off a rocket double from Victor Caratini, and they closed out with a 2-0 victory. So Quintana, let's talk about him. It's really nice to see back-to-back games from Hendricks and Quintana that looked a little more reminiscent of the guys we expected this year.
Yeah, I was really impressed with Quintana. I was really annoyed though. The San Francisco play-by-play guys keep calling him. It was Quintani or Quintana, and it sounded like someone. It was brutal. It was like, you know, God, you expect it from Chicago broadcasts to give the over-exaggerate the vowels, but I mean, come on.
It from like Chicago fans, like the people exactly. Who call in. I imagine that's like the people who call into the score, like, hey, I want to talk about that Jose Quintana or Jose Quintana.
Exactly. But beyond that, that was the only frustrating thing I saw from Quintana. he pitched great. It was great to see QB, the guy that we expected him to be, was locating his pitches. And like we were talking about, wasn't afraid to kind of throw some balls in the strike zone. I think he only got six swinging strikes, but he was locating extremely well in the corners, using that curve ball when he had to, and just inducing the ground balls when he had to. Like those, he had two really solid double plays yesterday.
Yeah, so
when he started.
Yeah. I'll admit, my wife sometimes feels a little left out of the loop when I have all these like late night games. Like we put our daughter to bed and I'm just like, well, Cubs game's on. So last night I ditched the Cubs game for the first maybe like five innings of it to watch I Love You Man with her.
Great movie.
I mean, Jason Segel makes that movie, but
so good.
But I still followed it on my phone. Watching like the game day and I was watching when Quintana was pitching where they were dotting the pitches on the little pitch chart, and I could like see it was painting a picture of what he was doing, and it just looked like so much better. Even without like actually physically seeing him throw pitches, I'm watching the pitch plot and I'm just like, he's much better, like dotting those corners exactly where he wants the pitches, going out of the zone when it's appropriate. It was just so much better.
Yeah, he looked like the guy we've been talking about. He seemed like he was sharp. He was locating. He seemed very comfortable on the mound. I don't know if San Francisco is just a place he likes to pitch at, but he looked really good. He looked like Quintana that we expected him to be. And like he said, really just, I mean, when he's on and when he's locating and when he's trusting his stuff, he's one of the better pitchers out there in baseball and just a very dependable guy. If this is like I said with Hendricks yesterday, if this is the guy we're going to get the rest of the year, the Cubs are sitting really nice now with three, four solid guys with Darvish coming off the DL here not too long.
Yeah, cross your fingers on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's exactly it. That's the big thing for the second half is, you know, A, getting Bryant and Rizzo healthy and back in the lineup, because I'm not totally convinced that Rizzo's not hurting at this point, and getting the starting pitching right. And I feel like they're on that path with the starting pitching, with the exclusions of Tyler Chatwood and Yu Darvish, who is still kind of an unknown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a good point. Yu Darvish and Chatwood, you know, still two guys that you got to worry about. But at least for the moment now, I think the Cubs can feel a little more comfortable with those three or four guys in their rotation for the moment right now.
Yeah. All right, so tonight the Cubs and Giants play today, an afternoon game. It's a 2:45 start. Mike Montgomery will take on Johnny Cueto. We talked about Cueto a little bit yesterday because he was the scheduled starter for yesterday's game, but they bumped him for Derek Holland. So same things on Cueto. Montgomery has a 3.15 ERA in his last seven starts, and he's gone at least five innings in every game. Although we have seen a little bit of regression from him his last three starts, he's totaled 16 innings with seven walks and 10 earned runs. So thoughts on Montgomery before we go to the second segment?
I mean, he's looking like a guy that hasn't been a consistent starter in a couple years. You know, a guy that's, I'm sure it was easy for him to get in there when he's motivated and excited to be a starter. You know, we heard all the comments from the beginning of this offseason. He wants to be a starter. He was drafted by the Royals to be a starter. And now he's getting his chance, and now he's kind of, I think he's finally starting to get the actual, you know, workload of a starter, and, you know, maybe he has to adjust to a little bit, but for the most part, I mean, he's looked solid. You know, his last couple outings, of course, you know, I mean, there's the game against Cincinnati. That wasn't terrible. Minnesota, not bad. That Cincinnati game before that, he gave up four runs, and that's kind of where this, you know, little bit of a slump started, but he's still looking okay. If he just kind of limits the walks like he has these last couple starts, you know, in early June and, you know, late June, I guess, pretty much, you know, he should be okay. Once he starts walking, like most pitchers, that's when, you know, you got to really start executing and pitching, and, you know, that's when you run into trouble. So hopefully he can figure it out, but, you know, still loads better than Tyler Chatwood. You know, I'm not worried about that guy finding the strike zone now.
Yeah, that's a whole different issue, but I agree with everything you said on Montgomery. And, you know, a lot of people talk about him as, you know, the part of the reason why they can't put him in the rotation is because he's such a good reliever, and he has been good in the bullpen. But I think that also kind of underrates how good he is as a starter. And the conventional wisdom is if you have a good starter or a, you know, a great reliever, you would rather have the good starter because they bring more value.
Right.
And I mean, just looking at his numbers, Montgomery even strikes out more batters in the rotation, which you would not think is like a thing that should happen. You would think if right. you go to the bullpen, you strike out more guys there because the stuff will tick up and you kind of go to like basically two or three pitches and you narrow down, you know, what, you know, basically like fastball, curveball kind of thing. So as a starter, he actually misses more bats, and that, like, that's kind of surprising. So I think this is a guy who is probably better served as a starting pitcher going forward.
I think so too. And I was wanting him as a starter even last year before they added Brett Anderson. I know Len Casper was was advocating a ton for Mike Montgomery. He came on our 312 podcast right before the start of 2017. And the way Len was talking, it was almost like Montgomery had been penciled into that fifth spot. So I think he was surprised when they went and got Brett Anderson. And I think he was, you know, kind of feeling bad for Montgomery. But I mean, the guy, clearly he's shown he belongs. And, you know, like you said, it makes way more sense to leave him in the rotation right now than it does to force him as a long reliever and limit him to being kind of, in all honesty, a less effective pitcher.
Yeah. Well, I totally agree. All right. We're going to talk a little bit about Javi and Kyle Schwarber and what they'll be doing at the All-Star game. Obviously, Javi will be playing in the All-Star game and starting at second base, but Schwarber has something to do there as well. If you haven't heard this news, it's pretty good stuff. Let's go to our second segment. So, the Home Run Derby. I have a whole lot of really good memories of the Home Run Derby growing up, and then there was like a big gap in years where like no Cubs took place and took their spot in the Home Run Derby. So like when I was first becoming a baseball fan, Sammy Sosa was in the Home Run Derby like every freaking year. And then basically nobody until Bryant and Rizzo had kind of lackluster performances in the Home Run Derby 2 years ago.
Right.
And now we've got Javi Baez and Kyle Schwarber in the Home Run Derby this year. I'm probably more excited about watching them swing for the fences because I feel like they're more built for it than Bryant and Rizzo were. I'm more excited about watching that than I am watching the All-Star game, I think.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to watch Javi just wail on some balls. I'm sure this is something that he has been wanting to do for a while. Him and Schwarber make a ton of sense, like you said. The two guys were probably the most explosive pop. Clearly, like, Bryant and Rizzo are going to drive in the most runs that are better at situational hitting, but clearly the Home Run Derby is about just teeing up and swinging as hard as you can and crushing the ball as far as you can hit it. And I am so excited to see both of them in there. I was teasing with my brother, telling him, like, oh, man, I hope Javi goes to the Home Run Derby back in April. And he screenshotted the Bleacher Report update he got on his phone, sent it to me, and we both freaked out. So I'm really excited to see them both.
Yeah, and I'm going to – so I would think that – Javi has a really good chance of winning just because that quick bat speed and how hard he hits the ball when he connects.
Right. And
you would think with, you know, this style of thing that he's going to be able to connect more. I'm going to set the over under on pitches that Javi swings and misses at in the Home Run Derby at 0.5. And I think I might take the over.
I would, yeah, pound the over 100%. He's going to look, there's going to be some ridiculous gifts, people. Just be ready for it. He's going to swing and spin himself into the ground in some of these balls.
I mean, and that's not to like insult him, like he can't hit pitches, but I think there's going to be one that, like, you know, if Jim Hickey's out there throwing to him, there's going to be one that he kind of throws in a bad spot and Javi's just gonna swing and miss at it. He will swing at every single pitch that comes his way.
Yeah, there is no such thing as a break for Javier Baez. He's going to take every single cut. He will not be cheated, and that's great. That'll make that itself is worth watching the Home Run Derby.
Yeah, so I mean, really, for these two players specifically, mm-hmm. this is really cool to me because, you know, where they were, I mean, for Schwarber last year and for Baez a couple years ago, these were guys that naysayers were saying, look, these guys they're busts. They're not going to be able to be quality offensive players. They pointed to Schwarber and said, look at the strikeouts. He can't hit left-handed pitching. I was guilty on, you know, talking about how he can't hit lefties because, you know, up until somewhat recently, and he does still sit against lefties often, as we saw the last couple days, but up until recently he really hadn't proven at all that he could handle left-handed pitchers. And it wasn't just the numbers, it was watching him at the plate. He looked lost against lefties even as early as I think May. So these two guys just figuring it out and really putting together excellent seasons, it feels good for them. Like there's no two players other than Javi and Schwarber that I feel like really earned this and deserve this.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, the two guys that, I mean, the culture around them, as at least for Cubs fans, has drastically changed. I mean, everyone loves Javier Baez, and I think for the most part, everyone liked Kyle Schwarber, but they always came with their shortcomings and their disappointments. But I mean, clearly Javi has flipped the script. I mean, he looks like, I wouldn't necessarily call him an MVP candidate, but he's been easily one of the big MVPs for this team. And then you talk about Kyle Schwarber, just the season, the massive turnaround he had from being a guy that, you know, was going to the minor leagues, you know, just coming back from his minor league stint roughly around this time last year, to being a guy that's, you know, he's somehow the best defensive rated left fielder in baseball, which makes no sense, but he's still hitting the ball. He's getting on base like we saw in his 2015 season. He's hitting against the shift, which is something he did a ton in his beginning of the year in 2015 as a rookie and kind of just evaporated after the ACL tear. So, I mean, he's doing things that I think everyone was expecting him to do and then some. And it's just, I'm surprised how much people aren't talking about Kyle Schwarber as much as they were last year. And it's just like, you know, find your scapegoat, I guess, but, you know, good for both these guys because they deserve it.
Yeah, and, you know, he talked in the offseason about how his big goal was he wanted to win a gold glove as a left fielder. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody laughed about it. I laughed about it and said, no chance that ever happens. And under the old rules, where basically it was just pick three outfielders and it always ended up being like Andrew Jones, Jim Edmonds, and, you know, somebody else who was a center fielder in the National League, there really would be no chance because it would always be that great defensive center fielder in all three spots.
Right. But
now that they have to pick a primary left fielder, a primary center fielder, a primary right fielder, I'm looking at how Schwarber has played this year. And I thought, you know, if it weren't for his reputation and the fact that most people, because they aren't watching him every day, still think he's a bad outfielder and don't really give him credit for, you know, the strides that he's made and, you know, how much quicker he is after the weight loss, I feel like he actually would have a chance because you talked about the defensive metrics that say that he's the best left fielder in the game. Obviously, defensive metrics year to year are, you know, not the most trustworthy at this point, at least the public metrics that we have. So when we talk about that stuff, we all kind of talk about it tongue in cheek because we know that, you know, that that's a little weird. And those, you know, year to year defensive metrics are have some weird fluctuations. But yeah, it's on point in a way that it does mention that it brings up the conversation that Schwarber is at this point, at least a good defensive left fielder, which is a phrase I never thought I would say.
Never came across my mind as something I would be like, you know what, Kyle Schwarber, like I always use the term like slightly above average at best. You know what I mean? Like that was, I feel like, the ceiling for Kyle just because of the build he had. But I mean, I don't think anyone expected Kyle to go out this offseason and drop 40 pounds like he did. I don't think anyone expected him to get in as great a shape as he did. I mean, why not? I guess, you know, like if you can do it, go for it. But I mean, it's just, honestly, for a guy that was literally in every trade rumor all of 2016 and all of last year, to come out, not only just prove to the front office that he's so committed to this team, but just the fans to like physically see these results, and especially now after we've gotten close through half a season to see what Kyle Schwarber can be. I mean, it's great. And I think everyone got a little spoiled when Chris Bryant comes up and proves that, you know, the moment he comes up here, he belonged, which no surprise. I think it's kind of like the way these guys all shot up in the team at the same time kind of gave people unrealistic expectations of who these people would be. You know, unfortunately, every team doesn't have an MVP candidate at every position. But what Kyle Schwarber's doing is exactly what I think the Cubs front office was expecting him to be at this point. And then the defense, of course, is a massive plus.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're getting decent defense out of him, and I wouldn't say that he is a gold glover, even under the current rules, I feel like they're probably better left fielders, but just the fact that you could even put him in the conversation and bring it up and not laugh about it like we did even just 4 months ago or 3 months ago, that's a big change. So final thing I want to do about this before we do our final segment, Javi and Schwarber, forget everybody else, who has the better chance in your mind of winning the home run derby between these two?
Man, I think it's Javi just because of the newer format. It kind of caters more to the guys that might be maybe not necessarily like out of shape, but more athletic. I think Javi just feels like, especially being Javi and how competitive he can be, I feel like he's the guy that fits this new kind of format a little bit better. It kind of reminds me of like the slam dunk competition where it's like, you know, maybe LeBron would be cool to watch, but, you know, Zach LaVine's won it two times and it's been interesting. So I don't know. I say Javi, but that being said, that probably means Kyle Schwarber clubs 30 or 40 somehow and, you know, just puts on a show. But Javi for sure would be my bet.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, but I don't think there's a big gap, we'll say. I feel like Javi has the better chance, but I could totally see Schwarber going out there and doing exactly what you just said and just hitting a ton of home runs, getting that extra time. They still do that, right? Like they did that last year, the extra 30 seconds if you hit two over 440 feet or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Schwarber just bombing 450-foot home runs left and right.
Yeah, I hope so. That would just be so much fun. He makes it look so effortless, too. He's just, he's so much fun.
Right. All right. Let's go to our final segment. So yesterday in the NL Central, the Cubs pulled off that awesome win in San Francisco. It was kind of boring a game overall. If you're you know, staying up late to watch it, obviously you would like a little more excitement than a 2-0 win. But it was still a win, and unfortunately, pretty much the rest of the division won as well. The Brewers beat the Miami Marlins 8-4. Travis Shaw homered and Christian Yelich went 3-for-5 with 4 RBI. The Cardinals trounced the White Sox 14-2. All-star Miles Michaelis went 6 innings and gave up just 2 runs, while Colton Wong was 4-for-5 out of the 9-hole with a home run. And did you see Dexter Fowler? A grand slam.
Yes, I did. My mom was very concerned because she was watching the game and I was happened to be talking to her on the phone at the time. And she's like, Dexter Fowler had a grand slam. And I was like, Dexter Fowler, is that a replay from like 2016? What are you talking about? And they were playing highlights during the game or whatever. But yeah, good for Dexter. That probably shut some people up, hopefully, or, you know, to maybe get some talking again. Who knows? But good for Dexter.
it was weird for him to be a Cardinals player at US Cellular Field hitting a grand slam and just putting the game out of reach and pretty much right. getting a standing ovation at the park for it, because, you know, I would bet the ratio of Cubs fans and Cardinals fans there cheering for him was probably way more than the amount of White Sox fans who were there, which is a little sad, but
yeah, I agree. Yeah, you're probably not far off.
So the Washington Nationals beat the Pirates 5-1. And did you see what happened in the Reds game?
No, I did hear about it though, but I did not see it.
So the Cleveland Indians, who have great starting pitching and a terrible bullpen, they took a 4-0 lead into the ninth. Trevor Bauer pitched eight shutout innings with 12 strikeouts, turned it over to Cody Allen, their closer, who is the one pitcher who has maybe been pretty good for them this year out of the bullpen. And he managed to record just two outs and gave up 6 earned runs. It was 7 total runs that came in the ninth inning for the Reds, and they won 7-4.
And it was Joey Votto that knocked in one of those key runs, I think, right? Something like that. But that, I mean, what? Like, who saw that coming, right? Just crazy. Very Cubs against Braves-esque game there for the Reds. So good for Cincinnati.
Yeah, I mean, they just keep winning, right? Like, that's...
It's crazy. They're only 10 games under 500 now, and that's, I mean, that seemed like, if you were to tell me they would finish 10 games under 500, I would think, you know, that's crazy. But here they are, halfway through the season, looking like a team that could potentially finish close to 500. So, I mean, good on them. I don't know how they're doing it, but they are.
All right, so that leads us right into our standings. Look, the Cubs remain 1.5 back of Milwaukee because the Brewers won. Brewers are 55-37. Cubs are 52-37. Cardinals are 7 back of the Brewers and 5.5, if I'm doing math right. Yeah, back of the Cubs at 47-43. The Pirates are 42-49 and 12.5 back. And the Reds are 41-51 at 14 back. So not only are they 10 games below 500, but they're only a game and a half out of fourth place, which there's another thing that I think, you know, I predicted that the Pirates would finish in last at the beginning of the season and the Reds would take fourth place, win maybe 75-77 games. But at this, at the start of the season, who thought that it would actually be a realistic chance of that happening? And, you know, like you said, here we are just days away from the All-Star break, and hell, the way the Pirates are playing, the Reds might be in fourth place by the All-Star break.
They very well could. The Pirates have been not good, and the Reds have been one of the hotter teams in baseball, which they had to be relevant. I mean, they're not likely going to be, but it's an interesting story. And at least if you're a Cincinnati fan, at least you feel like you've got a nucleus that you could potentially build around, you know, I guess an aging nucleus with, you know, Votto being 33 and whatnot, but at least it's a fun team. You know, it reminds me of like some of the 2009, 2010 Cubs teams that kind of sort of seemed like they could be good, but then, you know, prove that they weren't once again.
But at least this team has some young talent on it, whereas that team was all aging veterans. Obviously Votto is, you know, an aging veteran, but he's still a great player. If you're a Reds fan, you know, basically if they keep playing like this towards the end of the season, obviously not this hot, but maybe they finish with that 75-77 win range and maybe just a couple games under 500. And go into the offseason and maybe you just make a couple smart ads of veteran pitchers. How good are you feeling about next year actually competing if you're a Reds fan?
I mean, that's been their big issue, is they just haven't had much pitching. It feels like their best starter was always Johnny Cueto or Homer Bailey, which, I mean, Cueto's great, but clearly if you don't have anything surrounding him. I mean, there's a legitimate chance this team could compete. I mean, I don't know if they'd be able to overtake the Cubs, the Brewers, or St. Louis, even if they did add some better pitching. But, I mean, they're at least in the picture, and they're way more competitive than potentially St. Louis right now, who just has good pitching but doesn't seem to have the bats and continuously can't find the bats. So who knows? But, I mean, they've got a young nucleus, like you said. They've got a good amount of young guys that can come up here pitching-wise, too. They've got some good prospects. But, you know, you add a veteran guy like your, you know, John Lester or Jake Arrieta-esque type of guy, and you've got potential here, and that's huge.
Yeah. All right. That wraps it for us. This is episode 101, not 109. I don't know where that came from. Episode 101 of Locked On Cubs. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Ryan Davis. You can find me on Twitter at Ryan Q. Davis. I write occasionally for the Sporting News and several other places, The Athletic, Bet Chicago, blah, blah, blah. Why don't you tell people where they can find you?
Yeah, definitely. You can find me at, of course, Locked On Cubs, where I try and write at least once a week. I've got, I do a column for the MLB fan side. It's side I handle some of their power rankings and do a weekly column just about something in baseball. And then I do the 312 radio show now. We are live in Evanston on 1590 WCGO every Saturday with myself and Matt Peck, who is also a co-host of the Locked On Bulls podcast. So all in the family here. But yeah, that's where you can find me.
Awesome. I will talk to you again tomorrow.
Damn, sounds good, Ryan.